Great. Thanks very much, and thanks everyone for joining the call. The President's put forward an ambitious climate action plan, a strategy that helps to reduce carbon emissions, diversify our energy portfolio, enhance our energy security, and support good-paying jobs here in America. And wind power is a key technology to help us realize that strategy. And it's truly remarkable how much change has occurred in the last 6 years in the energy landscape, but perhaps nowhere has progress been as dramatic as in renewable energy. And if you just look at wind power, since President Obama took office, generation of wind has more than tripled. So wind power is reaching more and more families, and a third of all new generating capacity has come from wind over the past 5 years. So today the U.S. stands as a global leader in wind energy. The U.S. is first in the world in wind power generation. Growing America's wind industry has boosted the economy, spurring more than $400 million in exports in 2013 and supporting thousands of jobs related to developments, citing manufacturing, transportation, and other industries. So it's really exciting today to help to release this new Wind Vision report. The Department of Energy is releasing a report that charts the future of wind power through 2050. Wind Vision, a new era for wind power in the United States, shows that with continuing technological advancements, cost reductions, siting and transmission development, the nation can deploy wind power to economically provide 35% of our nation's electricity and supply renewable power in all 50 states by 2050. This would have huge benefits for our country. The climate benefits outlined in the Wind Vision would have far-reaching implications for the country. As wind becomes a larger part of our electricity supply, wind power will offset greenhouse gas emissions, reduce air pollution and particulate matter, and just potentially save over 260 billion gallons of water. In fact, by 2050, wind energy could offset more than 12 billion metric tons of carbon pollution. That's equivalent to eliminating a third of global annual carbon emissions. In order for wind power to continue to be a leading source of renewable energy for the country and to help achieve the overarching benefits defined in the Wind Vision, continued growth of the industry is underpinned by the need for consistent policy to foster growth. And so the President has called for a permanent extension of the production tax credit in order to eliminate the boom and bust cycle of wind growth that is perpetuated by short-term extensions of federal policies. It's also why we're proposing to, why EPA has proposed the Clean Power Plan to put in place a long-term framework for the power sector to reduce emissions over time. So the Wind Vision Report shows that wind is a powerful tool to reduce carbon pollution from the power sector. America is reducing our dependence on more polluting energy technologies, and efforts are being made at both the state and federal level to reduce carbon emissions from the power sector. Every year, wind becomes cost competitive in more states, and this Wind Vision Report shows that all 50 states could have utility-scale wind energy by 2050. So the states design plans to reduce carbon pollution from power plants under EPA's Clean Power Plan. Wind energy is going to play an important role and presents a viable and affordable option for renewable energy generation in across the country, including in new areas like the southeastern United States. Our nation's expanding transmission grid is the backbone of our economy and a key factor in future economic growth. Expanding and modernizing our grid, as outlined in the Wind Vision Report, will provide improved access to locations with higher wind speeds, helping save consumers money, and accelerate the creation of thousands of construction operation jobs. So, I think this Wind Vision is important. It shows that we can make huge progress in deploying clean energy and wind specifically in the coming years and decades. And it also shows that the benefits outlined, the vision outlined in this report can be achieved if we have sensible policy and if we continue the technology innovation that's been driving down the cost of wind energy. So the U.S. is uniquely poised to accelerate development of this important resource and this important technology. And I think this report is going to really help to keep us making the progress that we've seen in recent years. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Lynn Orr, who is the Undersecretary for Science and Energy at the Department of Energy, and he's going to tell you more about the Wind Vision Report.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Dan. I'm pleased to be with you today. So as Dan said, I'm the Undersecretary for Science and Energy, and my job is to serve as the lead technologist at the Department of Energy. So I work to oversee the department's fundamental scientific research, but also our applied energy research as we work to discover and develop new clean energy technologies. Our mission is to address the energy and environmental challenges, including climate change, to enhance the nation's prosperity and security. And that certainly includes DOE's work on wind energy. And I'm happy to report that today wind energy is at the cusp of cost parity with other forms of energy that we use so widely in our economy. And the Department of Energy is prepared to take it all the way to the finish line. This is a role that DOE has been playing for the last 40 years, and the investments made over that time have been paying dividends for the American people. Specifically, research funded by DOE has played a critically important role in driving down costs. Today, in some parts of the U.S., wind energy is already the cheapest option for consumers. So the Wind Vision Report quantifies the economic and environmental and societal benefits of a robust wind energy future through 2050. The report highlights what's already a fact in many American communities, that a robust wind energy future, where wind effectively provides significant benefits to the nation, is on the horizon in all 50 of the states. So let me just mention a few of the key findings. First, America is already the global leader in wind energy, with enough installed wind capacity to power 17 million homes. Second, wind will be in all 50 states by 2050 if we continue to work hard to make that true. Today, utility-scale turbines are already installed throughout the country, and the U.S. wind industry has helped to spur more than $500 million in exports and more than 50,000 jobs related to development, siting, manufacturing, transportation, and other industries. The report finds that with continued technology advances, wind energy could make up over a third of our nation's electricity and be in all 50 states by 2050. And by 2050, the wind industry could support over 600,000 jobs, so it's an important contributor there as well. Finally, the report includes a roadmap that sets forth actions the wind energy industry, research community, and others can take to accelerate the deployment of wind energy nationwide. So let me just finish up by telling you the main conclusion for this report. In today's ever-changing energy landscape, wind offers a power resource that is already the most competitive option in many parts of the nation. This report also finds that with continued commitment, wind can be the cheapest, cleanest power option in all 50 states by 2050. In short, wind is a critical renewable energy technology that will power America's future. Wind energy is affordable, it provides significant greenhouse gas emissions reduction potential, and it will create hundreds of thousands of good-paying jobs here in the United States. And with that, I'll stop and say thank you, and we'll be happy to respond to questions.
And ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. You will hear a tone indicating that you've been placed in queue, and you may remove yourself from queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Again, if you have a question, please press star one at this time. And our first question comes from Edward Felker with CQ Roll Call. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm curious where the report, and I haven't had a chance to look through it yet, and anyone can answer, but where do you see the biggest impediments at the state level? And would that be transmission? Would that be state renewable energy policies? Which of those issues at the states have to come together for these goals or at least projections to be reached? Thanks.
Well, good morning. This is Jose Zayas from the department. I'm going to touch on your first point, which is transmission. I think, as you will find from the report, transmission is key in terms of enabling this distributed source to be distributed across the nation, ensuring that we have electricity, reliable electricity across the nation. So transmission is key. What you will find from the report is that approximately 800 or so miles will be needed on an annual basis. The good news is that that is comparable to what we've been installing over the last decade. So we believe that with a continued commitment to transmission expansion, enabling sources such as renewable across the nation will be key, and that is a key finding of the report.
Our next question comes from Michael Copley with SNL Energy. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just given the opposition that exists to the President's Clean Power Plan and also efforts to either phase out the PTC or block it from being reinstated now, how does this report get more turbines built? And also, in the course of your research, did you get any sense of how much longer the industry would need the PTC and at what level? Thanks.
So this is Dan. Let me take a first cut at this, and then DOE can jump in. I think, you know, let me speak first to the Clean Power Plan. I think, you know, the President and the administration are committed to finalizing that plan and seeing it through. We think there's enormous flexibility for states in developing plans to meet the standards that EPA will put forward. And I think one of the things this report shows is that, you know, wind is an important option for all states to consider and can play a key role in meeting the objectives under the Clean Power Plan. So, you know, we remain very committed to and optimistic about the Clean Power Plan and what that can do to drive wind and other clean technologies in the coming years. So with that, I turn to DOE and see if they want to add anything to that.
This is Lynn Orr. I'd just reinforce the idea that having a diversified energy system with a variety of clean energy resources in play is exactly what we want, and this report suggests that wind can play an important role in all of that.
Our next question comes from Elena Shore with Politico. Please go ahead.
Hi. My question kind of touches on the mention of the PTC earlier. The report does state that, you know, the previous robust growth in the industry is not expected to continue, thanks in part to Congress letting the PTC lapse. I'm wondering, Mr. Utek, and really anybody, do you hope that this report kind of convinces Congress to put this incentive on a more long-term path? Is that one of the key goals here?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's certainly a key finding from this report. And that's certainly the kind of thinking that has underpinned what's been a proposal from this administration for a number of years running, which is to make the PTC permanent, provide the kind of stability that is needed not only for developers to move forward and put more wind turbines up, get more wind on the grid, but also for manufacturers to make decisions to locate their facilities here in the U.S. as opposed to somewhere else. And I think that kind of market stability is really key to both of those things. So that's one of the reasons that we're so keen on trying to get a permanent PTC in place. And I think that this report shows in detail both the past value of the PTC as well as what it could do going forward.
Our next question comes from Kate Ling with Greenwire. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for holding this call. Do you think that you can hit the targets in the report if the PTC doesn't move forward? And what do you think is the biggest sort of improvement from the 2008 report that enabled you to reach this 35% conclusion? Thanks.
Well, let me take the first cut at it. I mean, I think we are, as I said, we're going to be working hard to get the PTC done. We're also committed to the Clean Power Plan. I think between those two things, we'll have some strong incentives in the near term. Clearly, there's a report out to 2050, so that's a long time frame, but we're going to be doing everything we can over the next 2 years to put a strong framework in place for the coming years and decades. I refer to Lynn and see if he wants to comment on technology. I think we've seen significant improvements in technology and cost, and expect those to continue.
I would echo that the policy is important, but it's our job to work on as many ways to be to bring the cost of wind power down as much as we can, and the technology research has an important role to play there. If we keep our nose to the grindstone and work hard on the research side, we really expect wind to be competitive with no subsidy by somewhere around the 2030 time frame across the country. In some places, it's already competitive to the places with the best wind resource. So we need all the parts. We need the technology research. We need transmission. We need a marketplace that can support all of this. But if we do a good job of that, we can really make a significant contribution through wind.
Our next question comes from Barney Jobson with Financial Times. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thanks, and good morning. I have two questions. Firstly, Lynn, you've mentioned that wind is already the cheapest option for consumers in some parts of the country. Could you just tell us where those places are? And then secondly, what concerns, if any, does the administration have about the local environmental impact of wind power in terms of visual blight and kind of despoilment of landscapes?
I can answer to the question of where it's most competitive now, and it's kind of in the middle part of the country in the kind of Great Plains area where there's a good wind resource and lots of land available. In terms of the other kinds of impacts, you know, there's no energy technology that doesn't have some impact. We're working hard to kind of reduce those impacts as well. And I would note that in addition to the climate benefits here, there are actually lots of other benefits. There are benefits with regard to criteria pollutant emissions. There are benefits in reducing the amount of water we have to evaporate in cooling towers at power plants. So there are lots of potential benefits. And we think that if we on innovation that involves going to higher heights, we can reduce some of the impacts that people object to, and we can move the turbines farther apart. So there's a variety of angles to work on all of that.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question comes from Carl Stromstra with Recharge News. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi there. I'm interested. The report makes clear that wind will be increasingly competitive against fossil fuels in the coming decades. But I'm wondering what you think about some of the other renewables, which may have many of the same tailwinds as wind, particularly solar, where costs have actually been coming down much faster in recent years than wind. So the 35% assumption for 2050, does that come on top of then some other large contribution from solar or some of these other renewables? Or do you essentially assume that wind will be out competing solar and distributed generation in the future? Where's the kind of tension or overlap between some of these newer sources? Thanks.
So first I would observe that we really do want a diversified portfolio of clean energy resources in the mix. The sun is the really big resource, and in some sense the sun makes the wind. We don't mean to say that this is the only important renewable resource in the mix. It's true that the cost of solar cells has been coming down rapidly. It's still more expensive than wind in many kinds of applications. So there is a longer road for that part. But at the same time, the research effort there is part of this portfolio of energy resources. So there's lots to be positive about that as well. This report establishes that if we do the kinds of things that we've applied already, that we can get to the 35% area with other contributions as well from other clean resources. It's not a projection in the sense that it's a scenario that says that looks at what the impacts would be and is it reasonable to think that we could get there. So markets will determine how these things play out in the end, and with our continued efforts on the research side, we hope to have a quite significant renewable contribution to the portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all right, Lynn. This is Dan. I think, you know, clearly solar is also growing rapidly, and we expect that will continue. I think today's report and this call are really about highlighting the potential of wind. But yes, we expect a growing contribution from solar as well.
If I may just add, following both Dr. Orr's and Dan's statement, I would just say it's important to know that the report, although it does have a very strong focus on wind, it actually looks at wind's competitive nature within the entire energy system where renewables, fossil traditional generation sources are in place. And what you will find is that solar does have a very strong contribution as we move forward specific to the question. So as Dr. Orr alluded to, I think the intent was really to capture the possibility of what wind can contribute and, of course, at the same time capture the what we would call the impact and the benefits of doing so. But it's important to note that this was done holistically as we transform the energy picture moving forward as a consideration.
And we have a follow-up from Kate Ling with Greenwire. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I was just wondering, I'm sorry I haven't seen the report yet, but is there different scenarios within it, considering whether it is achievable with a PTC or without? And is there something about the cost? I know the original 2008 report had the cost in there as well.
So I'll start, but I'm going to quickly hand it to Jose. There are alternatives considered in the report, but the policy alternative was not a big player here. So aside from the looking at the production tax credit, so there is a wider policy discussion that could be held around this. But there are some options of various pathways in the report.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Orr. I would just add that there is a significant amount of sensitivities that were modeled, as you alluded to. Technology cost was one of them, where we looked at fairly conservative to fairly aggressive to a median case. In all cases, all sensitivities really had three dimensions that they were modeled. Additional sensitivities include projections of energy demand, as an example. For the purposes of this report, policies were modeled as enacted through the end of 2013, so it makes no projections on new policy requirements, as we thought it was the most appropriate way to do the analysis, but it has been captured in previous answers by Dan and Dr. Orr. There are a lot of vehicles that could be considered to enable this scenario set as a consideration, and those are technology cost reductions, other policies, et cetera. So it's important to note that all analysis did not include future projections of policy.
Okay, thanks.
And we have a question from Herman Trebisch with Utility Dive. Please go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if the report goes into aspects how the private sector can play a role, and particularly the role that utilities will play in the development of wind. And does it look at changes in RPSs, renewables mandates across the country?
Yeah, Jose, you're the right guy to answer that.
Thank you again. I would say that RPSs and in their current definitions were, of course, part of the analysis, where the analysis itself has awareness of all the RPSs and the requirements that they have. It does not expand or project or require new RPSs, but it does take them into account. To answer specifically your first question, the role of industry, I would also argue OEMs, developers, of course, their participation and information was sought to make the robust report, but also through the roadmap where a series of actions for the entire stakeholder community are documented, you will find that some of them are more targeted to the research community versus the development community and others. So the intent is to not only capture the possibilities, but also to capture the activities that the broader community could consider in order to make a scenario like the one discussed today a reality.
What about utilities?
As well, all sectors were considered and in participation and in the roadmaps. So utilities, the developers, the OEMs, the NGO community, and the research community all were a part of the report and of the roadmap.
And our next question comes from the line of Chuck Zimmerman with DomesticFuel.com. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, and thank you for taking my question. Regarding policy, which we've seen to be so important in other renewable sectors where there's been uncertainty like ethanol, biodiesel, et cetera, and the idea of the tax credits or subsidies, do you ever foresee a time or an opportunity for the leaders of these different sectors to kind of come together in terms of maybe trying to jointly better educate, say, the public as well as our lawmakers in terms of policy to help in light of the fact that we've got so many subsidies and continuing things like that with the oil business? Thank you.
This is Dan. I think that you're seeing you see strong efforts by certainly by the wind industry, by many, to make their voices heard here in D.C. on these issues. I think on the, you know, the PTC is a policy that's had enjoyed strong bipartisan support, and we expect that to continue. And so we'll be pushing hard on it this year.